Welcome to the Deep Dive. You know, we often talk about navigating the complex world of finance, right? And sometimes the most, let's say, powerful opportunities are the ones that are kind of hidden in plain sight, just not widely known. Today, we're diving into exactly that. We're looking at private placement programs, often just called trades. Our goal here is really to shed some light on what they are, how they genuinely work, and maybe why they're one of finance's best kept secrets. And get this, here's a little teaser. Apparently, less than 1/100,000th of 1% of people even know this stuff exists. Wild, right?
It really is. And for this deep dive, I think it's useful to kind of push past the usual assumptions about finance. We're going to focus more on the mechanics behind it all and the history. That's where the real understanding comes from, I think, not just the surface level.
Okay, sounds good. Let's unpack that history thing, because you said it's fascinating.
Yeah.
Where did these trades actually begin? I read they started way back, like early 1900s. Developed by the U.S. and Switzerland, but based on something even older from Siam, which is Thailand now, of course.
That's the origin story, yeah? Well, you know, the specifics of how effective those very early ones were are a bit lost to time. Things get really interesting. I mean, really interesting. When we hit 1944, think about the world then. World War II. Just absolute devastation, unimaginable economic ruin, human suffering. It was... well, unprecedented. The world needed something radical.
Right. And that leads us straight to the Bretton Woods Conference. July 1944, that famous meeting. Wasn't it like 130 top minds, economic, social, political thinkers all gathered in New Hampshire?
Exactly. And a key figure there was John Maynard Keynes, you know, the famous British economist, nominated 3 times for the Nobel Peace Prize, the father of macroeconomics. He brought this, well, pretty radical plan, drawing from that older Siam model. The goal wasn't just to rebuild after World War I and World War II. It was also about creating economic stability to try and prevent future wars. A huge ambition.
Wow. And his ideas, they directly led to founding institutions we still rely on heavily today, right? The IMF, the World Bank, the Bank for International Settlements.
Precisely. Those institutions grew out of that moment, out of Keynes's vision, and they now manage and operate a financing structure that evolved directly from those plans. Its first really big test, its first major application, was the Marshall Plan.
Oh, okay. Which funded the rebuilding of Europe and parts of Asia after both World War I and World War II. Huge impact.
A fundamental impact on the post-war global economy.
Absolutely. Okay, so that's the historical stage set, massive global forces at play. Now let's get down to the nitty-gritty. What are these trades? You mentioned they exist to, quote, create money. That sounds, you know, it sounds a bit strange, maybe even suspect to some folks. How does creating money from debt actually work legitimately?
Right. It does sound counterintuitive at first glance. But the key is understanding what they're trading. It involves dealing with discounted bank-issued debt instruments. Think of them as high-quality IOUs from major world banks. We're talking things like medium-term notes or MTNs, bank guarantees, BGs, and standby letters of credit, SBLCs. So money isn't just, like, printed. It's generated from the spread between the deeply discounted price these notes are bought at from the banks and the higher pre-agreed price they're immediately sold for. It's all contracted beforehand. It's basically monetizing a future payment obligation today. Very efficient.
And you're saying banks issue these constantly. Billions of dollars worth.
Billions daily, yeah. At discounted prices. It's a constant flow.
And how do banks account for this? Is it just on their main books?
Well, that's another interesting part. This often falls under what banks call off-balance sheet activities. Mm-hmm. These are basically contingent assets and liabilities. Their value kind of depends on a future outcome, so they might only show up as memo items, not directly hitting the main balance sheet in the same way. This gives banks flexibility, you know, helps them manage capital requirements while facilitating these massive flows.
Okay, that makes sense. And it wasn't always open to just anyone, right? And until the 2008 crash, it was mainly huge corporations and certain government bodies. But interestingly, governments themselves, public companies, even the banks, they can't directly put their own money into a PPP.
That's a critical distinction, yeah. It highlights the private nature, and it leads to a fundamental difference between this private market and the, let's call it, the normal open market. The regular stock market, for example, is highly regulated, open, works like an auction with bids. This is different.
So how does the buying and selling work then? You mentioned arbitrage, but it sounds different from how we usually hear that term.
It is different. In this context, arbitrage isn't about finding tiny price differences in fast markets. It's a pre-planned, fully contracted series of buy and sell transactions. Prices are locked in before the trade even starts. You have the banks, then these master commitment holders think huge trusts or foundations with massive capital they contract with the banks. Then you have sub-commitment holders, and finally, the exit buyers who are contracted to buy at the higher price. Every step is legally binding. Zero guesswork.
Okay, so it's all pre-arranged. That sounds much safer.
Exactly. And that structure explains something really important, why the traders involved never have direct control over the client's funds. It's because the client's money isn't actually needed to buy the instruments. It only needs to be reserved or blocked.
As collateral.
Precisely. It acts as collateral for the bank to issue a line of credit to the trader. It's a safety mechanism. It means these programs have an incredibly high success rate because all the pieces, the buyer, the seller, the price spread, are locked in contractually from the get-go. The deal can't really fall apart midway.
Okay, that's a crucial safety point. Now let's bring it back to the listener. If the banks and these big commitment holders have so much money, why are client funds needed at all?
Because, as you mentioned, regulations often prevent banks and these large entities from trading directly with their own funds in these specific programs. They need external capital to collateralize the trades and generate the leverage.
So the client's principal,
yeah,
it's never actually at risk of being lost in the trade itself.
Correct. It's typically held securely, often in an attorney-managed escrow account. It just sits there as a compensating balance. The bank sees those reserve funds and then provides a line of credit to the trader, often at a really significant ratio, like 10 to 1. So, say a trader reserves $100,000 of client funds. The bank might then lend $1 million against that collateral for the actual trading activity. Your money is safe, just enabling the larger transaction.
Okay, and what's the timeline like for the client? When do they see their money again? I understand the full 100% principal amount is returned within a 90-day period after it goes into the trade. Is that about right?
That's the standard time frame, yes. Within 90 days, the principal is back with the client.
And then the earnings from the trade. When do those arrive?
Those typically follow about 6 weeks after the principal is returned.
Right. Now let's talk potential, because this is where it gets really different from traditional investments. According to Morningstar data, a good average mutual fund might return, what, around 12% a year? So about 1% a month.
Yeah, that's considered a solid return in the public markets. But compare that. These trades for what's called a builder trade program are often generating somewhere in the range of 19% to 38% net returns per month. And for trades involving larger principal amounts, those net monthly returns can potentially be even higher. It's just a fundamentally different financial engine.
That difference is staggering. I saw a comparison from Forbes. Let me see if I have this right. It said something like, if you invest $100,000 in a mutual fund, or the S&P 500, even with a good 12% average annual return, it would take about 27 years to reach $1 million. And you have market downturns happening roughly every 5 years or so. It's that classic roller coaster ride, right?
Mm-hmm. Volatility is part of the public market game.
But with trades, that same $100,000, because of the potential monthly returns we just discussed,
wow,
you could potentially earn $1 million or more within just 1 to 2 years.
That's the potential timescale difference we're talking about, yes. It accelerates things dramatically because the returns are structured differently and generated monthly, not annually.
Mind-blowing.
And it's
not just about personal wealth accumulation, is it?
Not at all. That's what's also quite compelling. The applications are really diverse.
Yeah, I saw that groups facilitating these trades help people in lots of ways.
Yeah.
Like building multi-generational wealth for families. Sometimes it's just, what, 12 to 36 months?
Yes, creating that kind of legacy planning much faster.
And helping real estate developers fund projects 100% without giving up equity or taking on huge long-term debt.
Exactly. It provides a non-debt funding solution, which is huge for developers.
Same for entrepreneurs, funding businesses or franchises, right? Avoiding that lifelong debt burden.
Right. Getting ventures off the ground without starting deep in the red.
And even for charities, enabling them to fund their campaigns sustainably without constantly having to ask for donations. Imagine that.
It allows them to build an endowment, essentially generating ongoing income for their mission. It's a powerful model.
Plus, helping individuals maybe catch up on retirement savings if they started late, or build that rainy day fund, aiming for debt-free, stress-free living within a couple of years.
It offers a potential path to correct course financially, much quicker than traditional savings or investments might allow.
Okay, so the potential impact is broad. But this brings us back to the exclusivity. Why is it so little known? You mentioned it's invitation only, not public. Is it true that even regular bankers might not know this happens within their own institutions?
It's very true. It operates at a highly private, often compartmentalized level within the financial world. Remember that tiny fraction of a percent we mentioned earlier? 1/100,000th of 1% of the population. That's how exclusive this knowledge is. It's designed to be stable and predictable, operating away from public market noise and scrutiny. That privacy is part of its structure.
So the obvious question then is, if it's so powerful, why isn't everyone trying to do it, besides the invitation-only part?
Well, the barrier to entry is high, requiring significant capital even just to collateralize. And finding a legitimate, proven pathway in is the key challenge. It's not something you just sign up for online.
Which underscores the need to work with ethical, reputable, and successful organizations, right? Because let's be honest, any financial opportunity, especially one sounding this good, invites skepticism.
Absolutely. Healthy skepticism is always warranted in finance.
But you mentioned key safeguards.
Yeah.
Mutual due diligence is always part of the process. And crucially, there are no upfront fees.
Correct. Those are fundamental checks. If anyone asks for upfront fees to access a trade program, that's a major red flag. Legitimate programs don't operate that way. Mutual due diligence protects both the client and the trade group.
And because it's so different from normal trading, confusion is understandable.
Oh, definitely. It's natural to have questions. How does the collateral work? How is the profit generated? It's not like buying stocks. That's why credible groups facilitating these trades welcome in-depth conversations. They expect questions and are prepared to provide detailed answers and documentation during the due diligence phase. Transparency is key once you're engaged.
Okay. So wrapping this up, what's the big takeaway here? We've explored this, well, quite hidden world of private placement programs, these trades. It seems to be a legitimate financial structure with deep historical roots, something that has shaped global economies behind the scenes, and now potentially offers some very unique opportunities operating outside the usual financial channels.
I think the takeaway is realizing that there are established legitimate financial mechanisms that exist beyond what most of us see or hear about every day. And maybe the final thought to leave listeners with is, what possibilities could open up for you, for your family, for causes you believe in, if you explored financial avenues that operate effectively but are hidden in plain sight? It's about broadening perspective, perhaps.
A provocative thought indeed. Well, this has been incredibly illuminating. We want to thank you for joining us today. We also want to thank PlatformFundingGroup.com for supporting this Trades Education podcast.